Yeah, you were very ill last night, weren't you?
Yeah.
You had a massive temperature.
Today I haven't been ill at all.
Aside from that cough?
Yes, aside from the cough.
Which I'll try to edit out, Evie, don't worry. Also, I think you've given me the cough.
Sorry.
No, it's a present I don't want. Take it back. Okay. You have it.
Okay, give it to me.
I don't know how. Why do you have to make me ill?
I'm sorry.
What is it with you kids and making me ill?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I feel so cold.
No, you don't.
I do. No, feel the icy grip of death.
Dad, oh. Stop.
Goodbye, sweet Evie. Be good to the cats.
I am. Okay.
Look after your brother.
I will. But wait, if you die,
yeah,
then we won't have anyone to run the house.
Mummy runs the house.
No, I mean do the work to get the money.
No, no, don't worry. My life is insured. You'd have enough money. You literally don't need me around.
Hey up, I'm Joe Heathcote, and this is Consistently Eccentric, a British history podcast where we try to make sense of some of the lesser known and more absurd people and events these islands have produced. So let's get started with...
This story starts in the Victorian era, when Queen Victoria, little woman, sat upon a big throne. She was smaller than me, you know, Queen Victoria.
What?
She's like barely 5 foot, if that. She's a tiny little woman.
She is a tiny woman.
Well, yeah. But she was very powerful. Anyway, because on April the 28th, 1854, in Portsea, which is an area of Portsmouth.
Okay.
Which is on the south coast.
Which is near...
Southampton?
Poland.
No, no. It's on the south coast of England. It's not over in Europe.
Oh, okay. Wait, we're in Europe.
Yes, we are, but on mainland Europe.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
You were technically correct. The best kind of correct.
Okay.
A little girl in Portsea and Portsmouth, a little girl called Phoebe Sarah Marks was born.
Who's Phoebe Sarah Marks?
We're going to find out. She was the third child of a Jewish watchmaker called Levi Marks.
I know Levi. He's the guy in the Bible who's the tax collector and becomes Matthew.
Right.
In the Bible.
Okay, well, he may have been named for that, but there have been quite a few Levites in the Old Testament specifically, I think.
Okay.
Because Jewish people take the Old Testament rather than the New.
But this guy, but the Levi I'm talking about is the one that became Jesus' disciple.
Right, well... as far as I know, this Levi wasn't one of Jesus' disciples. He was a watchmaker, originally from Poland.
Yes.
So it does all come round. So he was from Poland. And he moved from Poland to Portsmouth to marry a seamstress called Alice. So he moved for love.
Oh, I moved for love. A bit like the little girl who married the man.
Hmm?
The little girl...
That's not a lot of information you're giving me
there. Who married the man?
Which girl and which man?
No. Isabella?
Oh, one of our queens.
Yeah, one of our queens.
Of Valois?
Yes.
And by man you mean king?
Yes.
That would have been... I would have got it quicker if you'd have done that, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, watchmaking had been a British speciality in the 16th and 17th centuries. We were the best in the world at making watches.
That does sound very important.
However...
Levi died, didn't
he? Sorry, in the 19th century, manufacturers in Switzerland and the USA had overtaken Britain in terms of production by a significant amount.
Oh.
Britain had been the place for watchmaking for centuries. It had been the place where the best watchmakers worked.
Yeah, okay.
And the most watches were made in Britain for the longest time.
Cool.
But in the 19th century... Just when Levi was getting started, manufacturers in Switzerland and the USA had overtaken Britain in terms of production by a significant amount. They were making way more watches than we were suddenly.
Who did it? John Phillips? John Phillips.
Who did it, John Phillips?
Yeah.
They're not in it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So Switzerland and the USA had overtaken in terms of production because while British watchmakers were producing around... 200,000 watches a year.
And we were doing?
That's British.
Oh, okay.
British people making around 200,000.
And they were doing?
Yeah. 200,000 sounds like a lot, though, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Swiss production was around 2,200,000.
But was the clock invented?
Yeah, we've had clocks for hundreds of years. The Swiss were using mass production techniques, so they had almost like a conveyor belt, so they had machines doing a lot of it.
But
whereas we were still doing it all by hand.
That means they're cheating!
No, there's just one way of producing things, so they were producing more.
Oh no, they are cheating, because if they don't do it by hand, then it doesn't count, because we have to do it all by hand. So I think that should not count.
It does count, because they're still making good quality watches.
I know, but on my scale, it does not count as making watches yourself.
Making things by hand is called artisanal, okay?
They're not making artisanal watches like
they're
we
not,
are.
They're not, but they're not claiming to. They're making watches... If you produce more of them in a short space of time, it means they're cheaper, which means more people can own a watch. So it's economy of scale. We'll get into this when you do your business degree. But suffice to say, Britain was behind the times with this one. However, the fact that the British were still reliant on handcrafted watches actually worked out for the Marx family and for Levi.
Oh, thank God.
As it meant he was able to bring in a really good wage to support his ever-growing family.
That's nice. That's good.
Because if you're working in a factory producing something, you don't need to have any specialist skills, really, because you're just making sure the machine's working.
And sometimes...
So they can pay you less.
And sometimes it makes pollution.
Oftentimes it makes pollution.
Yeah, oftentimes it makes pollution. So if you own a factory and you are listening to this podcast, lower down your factory a bit. Lower down the machines a bit. So it doesn't produce pollution.
Right.
Thank you.
I'm sure they're listening. All of those industrial sort of mega tycoons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going great. That was until Phoebe was 7 years old. Because Levi died suddenly.
I told you said suddenly he'd die.
Well, it's not like I made him die. It's just what happened.
But why when she was 7? Who's going to look after her?
Well, not just her, because he died when Alice was pregnant with the 8th child.
He died.
So, yeah.
He died during pregnancy.
Well, he wasn't pregnant, she was. But yes,
no,
he never got to meet his final child.
That's
She's quite
so
sad, isn't it?
And a bit angry. Because he wasn't there to comfort her.
Mm. And you know how I said I have life insurance, so if I die, you guys have money?
Yeah.
The Marx family didn't have life insurance. And although Alice did have her job as a seamstress, it wasn't even close to bringing in enough money to feed 8 kids.
Some of the kids should move out.
Well, Alice is 7 and there's only 2 older than her. I don't think any of them were old enough to move out at this point.
Oh, well, I know. Make a shed in the backyard for them to sleep in.
You think they had a yard?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Oh, well, just build a shed. Just, if you have an old child and he doesn't want, or he or she doesn't want to move out, build a shed in the backyard for them to sleep in. A shed in the backyard will always do.
As the oldest girl, though still not quite 10 years of age, so about your age, yeah?
Okay.
Phoebe took on the childcare duties for all of the younger children. So she started looking after all the kids. This was so that her mother could take on more work as a seamstress and earn more money to pay for the food and things like that you need, and clothes.
And the shed!
No.
Oh.
There will not be a shed in this. While it was a lot of responsibility, could you imagine having 5 younger siblings that you had to look after? And when I say look after, I mean there'll probably be some nappy changes in there. You probably have to do the bath routine, the bed routine, cook for them. Do you think you'd want that level of responsibility?
No, I think I think not having any kids enough for me.
Not having any kids is enough for you.
At the moment, I can barely take care of Milo.
Fair enough. None of us can take care of Milo. The lad won't be tamed.
The lad is crazy.
Mm.
And the lad is out of his mind.
While it was a lot of responsibility, it also meant that Phoebe was given a lot of freedoms and was able to manage the household on her mother's behalf how she saw fit. So she was managing the finances. She was deciding on what everyone was eating. She was deciding on bedtime. She was making sure the kids were learning things and were growing up well.
Okay, but had the fridges been invented?
No, we wouldn't have had electric fridges. We'd have had cold stores.
Okay.
But you would have been buying more on a day-to-day basis than you would buy in a weekly shop. Her mother, Alice, she saw how well Phoebe was doing and she recognised, this girl's intelligent. She's really switched on. She's really smart. And even though Alice was benefiting from having the help of her daughter basically taking on the job of childcare, she decided that Phoebe should get an education.
Go
to school. This was an unusual view.
But then who will look after the kids?
Oh, Alice was going to make it work. She didn't want her daughter to not have an opportunity to make something of herself. So she said, don't you worry about it. You're smart enough that you could go to a school and you could actually get an education.
Her older siblings, her two older siblings.
They're boys, so they don't get involved in childcare. Sorry, that's just the way it was. You can look at me like that. I didn't make the rules. They were probably out earning some money as well. They'd probably taken on jobs by this stage because they'd be like 13, 14, old enough to work, basically.
Damn it.
But it was a very unusual view for the time to want, if you were, you know, from the lower classes, to want your kids to have any kind of education in schools, especially a woman. You wouldn't have your daughter go to school. That's weird. Why would you bother? What does she need an education for? She needs to learn how to run a household and look after kids. And Phoebe already knows that.
She'd make a great mum.
Well, Alice, even though it was not usual, she reasoned that women, as far as she's concerned, have the harder battle to fight in this world. And so they need a better education than men in order to cope. She was very forward-thinking, was Alice.
And I am very happy.
You're happy with Alice's view?
Yeah, I do not like that women couldn't be able to vote and that they can't go to school.
Yeah,
and they have to look after the kids while the boys just jerk around, even if they don't have jobs.
The times, they are a-changing, and we may meet some suffragettes.
Suffragettes!
You like them?
Yeah, I do.
Luckily, while Alice was struggling to make ends meet, her sisters were actually quite wealthy, and they just so happened to run a school in London. They offered to let Phoebe attend when she was 9 years old, and it was an offer that was greatly accepted.
How old are her sisters?
Alice's sisters. Yeah. They'll all be adults as well.
Oh, okay.
But they said, look, sis, if your daughter wants an education, we run a school, so we can let her in for free.
Okay.
More used to making rules than following them, because she'd been looking after her younger kids, you know, for a while by this stage.
Okay.
Phoebe was a bit of a tour de force at school. She refused to do what the teachers told her.
Oh, God.
Unless she could see the point in what they were asking.
Okay.
So she wouldn't say yes, sir, or yes, ma'am. She'd go, why? And if she didn't like the reason, she'd go, no, I'd rather not. And she had a strong sense of justice. Once, she reportedly went on hunger strike for 2 days when she'd been wrongly accused of being naughty by a teacher. Until they said sorry. So they said she'd been messing about in class and she went, no, I wasn't. You need to apologise. And when the teacher didn't, she refused to eat for 2 days until the teacher gave in.
I nearly refused to eat today.
Yeah, but you were feeling ill. That wasn't a justice thing, was it?
I wasn't feeling ill today. It's because of the ham. I thought there was cheese stuck to the ham.
Oh no, it's breaded ham.
I know, I didn't know that.
And even if it was cheese, it would be a minuscule amount of cheese. It's not going to kill you. You're not lactose intolerant.
Okay.
However, when it came to the lessons, especially science and maths, Phoebe excelled. So much so that by the age of 16, she graduated and was working as a teacher herself.
What? When she was 16?
Well, I say teacher, she was a governess, which was like a private teacher, like a live-in teacher for rich people's kids.
Okay.
Yeah?
Cool.
This job allowed her to help support her family and was perfectly respectable. But her mother, Alice, still felt that she was destined for far greater things. So even though she'd risen and she was a governess and she was mixing with high society now because she was looking after the kids of lords and ladies and nobles and...
And kings.
Not quite king level. But the upper classes.
Okay.
Yeah. Her mum still felt, no, that's not the level you should be at. You can do better than that. just teaching their kids. You can do better than teaching their kids. Come on. Phoebe also felt that she could do far more than a woman at the time was generally allowed to do. So she naturally began attending meetings of the women's suffrage movement. The women she met here would go on to have a massive impact on her life. Perhaps none having more of an impact than a lady called Utterly Blind, which sounds like the punchline of a joke, because she was utterly blind.
Now I'm making up an otter character that's blind.
She wasn't an otter. She was the daughter of a German revolutionary. And it was her who gave Phoebe the nickname Hertha, after a poem by a bloke called Algernon Charles Swinburne, which is a great name.
I think
if you were a boy, we should have called you Algernon.
Yeah, but you were going to call me Otis.
We were, yeah.
And you didn't even know if I was a girl or a boy when I was born, so you called me Woodstock.
No, before you were born, we didn't know, so we called you Woodstock. We had names ready to go, but Woodstock was what a placeholder name.
Okay.
The first verse of the poem goes thusly. I am that which began. Out of me the years roll. Out of me, God and man. I am equal and whole. God changes and man. The form of them bodily. I am the soul.
Of the human body.
It's a long poem. It goes on for a while. And it's all a bit like that. But regardless...
Well, I think the last line should be, I am the soul of the human body.
I don't know what the last line of the entire poem is. I'll find out for you. The important thing, though, was that the nickname stuck. And from then on, Phoebe did not exist anymore. She was known to everyone as Hertha.
But seriously, Phoebe is a great name.
Well, I'm sorry. Now she's Hertha.
No!
Yep. Not only did Utterly give her a new name, but she also gave Hertha an introduction to a lady called Barbara Lee Smith Bodichon.
I have a bit of a problem with Barbara.
What, the name?
Yeah, I had a stone called Barbara and I wanted to destroy it.
Right, well, this isn't your stone, okay?
Okay.
Barbara Lee Smith Bodichon was a leading feminist, and she was a co-founder of Cambridge's first women's college.
Okay.
It was called Girton College, and still is. So women couldn't go to Cambridge University right up until the point where Barbara rocked up and went, you need a women's only college, and I'm just the woman to get it set up.
So she was the one who created girls' grammar?
No, she created the idea, or she helped create the idea of women going to university.
And girls' grammar?
Well, girls' grammar is before university.
And only girls' school?
Only girls' schools existed before then, but girls weren't allowed to go to university.
Okay.
But she took one look at that, did Barbara, and went, yeah, I think women should go to university, and I'm going to provide them with the college to go and do it at.
Okay.
Hertha, she impressed Barbara with her passion for science, and in 1874, at the age of 20... she passed the University of Cambridge entrance examinations for women with honours in English and maths. So she not only passed the entrance exam, she smashed it.
She blew the teachers away.
With her knowledge and her skill.
Yeah, so they ended up naked in a storm of knowledge.
What a lovely image you just painted.
A storm of knowledge.
It was great. However, it cost a lot of money to attend Cambridge. And Hertha, rather than going straight away, had to spend the next 2 years trying to impress enough influential people who would agree to sponsor her so that she could actually take up her place. So she had to go to all of these rich people that she knew now and ask all of them for a little bit of money so that she could eventually get enough to go to university.
Okay.
Amongst those she impressed was a lady called Mary Ann Evans, who was a female author.
Mary Ann.
Evans.
Evans.
And she wrote books as a job.
I'm
Though,
writing a book.
Because she was worried that women's books didn't sell as well, she used a pen name, George Eliot. So she pretended that she was a man in order that her books would sell better. Because men sometimes felt weird about buying books written by women at the time.
Mary Ann. I've heard that name before.
Well, somewhere. George Eliot, as she was known. Evans was so inspired by Hertha that she not only agreed to sponsor her to go to university, but she also based a character on her called Mira in her 1876 novel, Daniel Deronda. So Hertha is in a novel. She was used as a character in a novel. That's something to have on your CV. That's something like a life goal.
Yeah, I really, really, really like graphic novels and comics.
You do like graphic novels at the moment.
And comics.
Well, imagine if you were made a character in one by someone that you really liked.
But I am one. Evie from in the graphic novel.
Oh, your code name is Evie by Joe Sugg, yes.
Yes. Yep. So I already am.
Technically, I guess. No, but based on your personality. Like somebody who knew you, who knows you, writing a character of you.
Okay.
You just share a name with that one. This was someone who was based on Hertha.
Okay.
With the support of Bodichon and Evans, Hertha was finally able to start studying mathematics at Cambridge in 1876.
Okay.
Oh. Hertha threw herself into university life. She was in the choral society, which meant she did choir singing.
Okay.
She founded a mathematics club, which sounds boring, but apparently it wasn't.
No, it doesn't. I like maths.
More excitingly, though, she founded a female-only fire brigade.
Yay!
I don't know if they ever put out any fires, but there was the Girton College Fire Brigade.
That is actually so cool. So they're in charge of all the fire drills and stuff. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
I also wish that they'd set up a book club, because I like book clubs.
She liked reading, but I don't know that she set up a book club. She probably joined one.
Yay!
But while studying maths, she somehow found the time to build an early version of a sphygmomanometer.
What's that?
A sphygmomanometer.
Just call it a spigger.
No, it's a sphygmomanometer, and it's fun to say.
Can I call it a spigger? Sphygnomanometer.
Sphygnomanometer.
Sphyg.
Sphyg.
Sphygnometer.
Sphygnomanometer.
Can I try say it?
Yes. Yeah. Sphyg.
Sphygnomanometer.
A sphygnominominom. It's a blood pressure machine.
Okay.
So it checks your blood pressure. Why she was building something to check blood pressure when she was doing a mathematics degree, I don't know.
I think that...
But it just goes to show how good she was at these kind of things.
I think that would have been good... That is good for you.
Yeah, my blood pressure is very, very high. So it is a useful invention for me.
Okay.
She was considered to be one of the most gifted people in the entirety of Cambridge, and she was destined for greatness.
Okay.
So naturally, she left Cambridge in 1880 without a degree.
What does that mean?
It means she didn't get the qualifications at the end. She didn't get the piece of paper. You know, like mine and Mummy's degrees on the wall.
Certificates.
Yeah, she wasn't given one by Cambridge. This was not because she had not passed her exams, because she had passed her exams.
Oh, good.
Instead, it was because at the time, Cambridge refused to give degrees to women on principle. So it didn't matter how well you did. If you were a woman, you weren't getting a degree.
So even though you went to school, you were never allowed to leave?
No, she could leave. She just wouldn't get a degree.
So what you're saying is school forever?
No.
No,
she can leave. She left Cambridge. She just wasn't given a degree like the men would have been.
I hate men in history.
Yeah, I'm getting
except
that.
Except Harold.
Oh, yeah, of I course, like except
Harold.
Harold. You do. Hertha actually had to go to the University of London and pass another set of exams in 1881 to finally get herself a degree in mathematics.
Yeah.
Because while Cambridge wasn't giving out degrees to women, some other universities were.
Cool.
She used this degree to find work as a maths teacher. I mean, you've got a maths degree.
Yeah.
Seems natural way to go.
At some schools, there are teachers for every lesson, but at my school, there's only one teacher who does every lesson.
That'll change when you go to secondary school.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sad.
No. It's because you need to be more specialist.
But
primary school teachers probably have the harder job because they need to know a little bit about loads of different subjects. But once you get to secondary school, because of the depth of knowledge is greater that you need to learn, you need a specialist to teach you.
Oh. Okay.
So she got a job as a maths teacher so that she could continue to support her family. But while she worked as a teacher during the day, she spent her evenings pursuing scientific research.
So she was half scientist, half teacher.
Yeah, she was an amateur scientist at this point. A desire to be able to get more accurate recordings led her to invent a new kind of line divider, which is basically, it's an engineering tool for drawing a dividing a line into any number of equal parts.
Cool.
So it's just a drawing tool, essentially.
Yay.
Yeah.
Like the earthquake phenomenometer. And then when there's an earthquake, it bumps, and then the pen goes off the paper.
No, this is more, it's like a bit of a, it's so that you can measure very accurately. It was used for dividing lines into equal parts or for enlarging or reducing figures.
Okay. So
Pooh Bear probably uses a version of a line divider he was doing his engineering drawings.
Wait,
yeah?
Did she write graphic novels?
No.
As being a scientist?
No.
Just saying, because she said dividing the characters, so that's what made me think about graphic novels.
Unfortunately, you do tend to have a one-track mind when you're interested in something, don't you?
Yeah.
Once again, Bodichon supported her financially by giving her enough money to apply for a patent for her new invention. And the resulting positive press led to Hertha being asked to give a talk at the Institute of Physics.
Now, that gives me a picture in my mind as a long row of people sitting on benches on either side of the room.
Mm.
And then
she stood in the middle giving a talk.
A big step.
Yeah.
Some three big steps, and then at the top of the step, that little box with the...
A lectern.
Yeah, an lectern with a microphone so she can do her speech.
Well, she wouldn't have had a microphone, because this is a bit before microphones, but she would have stood up and given a talk on her new line divider tool and its uses and practical applications, and everyone went, oh, very good. And because she had the patent, which means it proved that she'd invented it, when it started to get sold, she was making money from it. Hertha decided that she wanted to pursue science full-time. And so later the same year, she began attending night classes at Imperial College London to study a new course called Electrotechnics.
But she's already a teacher.
This is an evening class.
Has she given up being a teacher?
No, she'd spend the days teaching and then she'd go to night school to learn all about electrotechnics, which is basically electronics and physics.
I really do not get the point of this. Of being a teacher but going to school.
She's a teacher of maths. She's learning a different subject. Because teaching's her job. She teaches maths. She's interested in science. So she's going to learn more about electronics and physics. Because those are areas she doesn't know enough about yet.
I still don't get the point.
Mm. Hertha was one of only 3 women on the course. Compared to 118 men. So there weren't many women interested in electrotechnics at the time.
Hear me out, men. In history, you were taking over the women. Stop trampling on our bodies. Peace.
She was taught by a man called William Ayrton, who was a physicist and a fellow of the Royal Society, and was also a champion for the education of women. He wanted women to have more opportunities to learn and to do things.
So she was happy when Hertha... or Phoebe showed up.
He was happy when Hertha showed up. He was so happy that he sort of saw her as his special project and he gave her lots of extra attention. He would spend extra time teaching her things.
And when she arrived, did he throw her a welcoming party? Because I can just picture a picture in my head with her in the room and then a party going on.
He didn't throw a welcoming party, but they did spend a lot of time together, and very soon they were doing smoochy kisses.
Mm. They fell in love.
Yes. And they...
I bet they are going to marry.
In 1885 they got married, yes.
I knew it!
Mm. This allowed Hertha to focus on scientific research full-time alongside her new husband, which sounded perfect. So they were two scientists together, doing scientific experiments and research, loving life.
After the... this podcast, I have something important to do. Research in my book about women.
Fair enough. I'm glad it's sparking the interest again.
Literally, the yellow book you bought me about women, I've heard that Mary thing before.
Okay.
I've heard that.
We can do that afterwards, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Because I'm very curious about it.
Speaking about women, in 1886, Hertha and William...
had a baby.
A baby girl.
How am I predicting the future?
Hertha called her daughter Barbara Bodichon Ayrton.
Another Barbara.
In honour of the woman who had done so much to support her education. So she remembered Barbara Bodichon and went, do you know what? I'm going to name my kid after you because you were an inspiration to me, Barbara.
Now I'm getting really freaked out because it's still reminding me of my rock called Barbara Smith.
Right. And while Hertha loved her daughter dearly, having a young child did limit the amount of scientific study she was able to complete. That's not to say she wasn't still innovating. In 1888, for example, she gave a series of lectures on electricity to women at Imperial College, which was a shocking act for many upper classes at the time. Do you want to hear a quote of what they thought?
Dad, mm-hmm. I think that's a joke because she was teaching about electric and a shocking time.
It wasn't meant as a joke. But thank you for picking that up. Joke. Do you want to hear what they said about her at the time?
Yes, and do it in a woman voice, please. Like you did with the Queen's
No, because it will be a man saying this.
Okay, do a man's speech.
That a woman should lecture to women on such a subject? This is a startling innovation. They weren't happy.
I think they should have had a bit more, you know, thankfulness, because if they didn't have women, then they wouldn't have children.
Well, that's the problem. They thought that's what women should be doing. Having children, looking after the home. And Hertha wasn't ready to do that. She continued to juggle family responsibilities with scientific study until on June 11th, 1891.
She died.
Her good friend and benefactor, died. Barbara Bodichon,
died.
As a final kindness to Hertha, Barbara left her enough money to hire a housekeeper, so that she could focus on research full-time, and little Barbara Bodichon, the tiny little baby Barbara, would still have someone to look after her. Hertha was grateful, and she was also very excited, and even more so when her husband told her that she could not work with him anymore.
Why?
Because he wanted her to do her own research. Because William was concerned that if they published joint papers, then everyone would assume that he'd done all of the work. Whereas if Hertha published on her own, there could be no doubt about just how amazing she was.
But wait, are they still married?
Yeah, they're still married. He's just going, we can't work together because you know what men are like. If they see that this is research done by William and Hertha Ayrton, they're going to assume I did all the work and I've just put your name on there to be nice. But if you do all of the work and you publish as just Hertha Ayrton, they'll know that you did all of it and that you didn't have any help.
Were cameras invented?
We're in the early days of cameras at this point, yeah.
So I think they should just take a picture of them working together.
I don't know if any pictures of Hertha exist, actually. I'll have to check for you afterwards. Mm. The area of research that Hertha decided to focus on was electric arc lighting.
What does that mean?
It's light produced by passing an arc of electricity between two carbon rods.
Okay.
And although arc lights have been used for many years by this point for public lighting, you know, like street lamps.
Yeah.
They would hiss and flicker and seem to defy the laws of electricity.
Can I make a...
Yeah. So you know how the street lamps that we have a constant light?
Yeah, but...
These ones would be flickering and hissing and it wasn't very efficient.
Oh, but... And Dad, sometimes our lamps...
But that's how you know something's wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the material...
Our bulbs are going out.
Yeah.
Why?
Because everything has a shelf life.
Okay.
We'll replace them, don't worry. But the problem with the hissing and flickering was it meant that the materials couldn't cope with the intense heat that was produced.
Did they set on fire so the women fire brigade could come?
No, they broke a lot. You think our lights break a lot. Back then with arc lights, they were breaking constantly and it was getting very expensive to keep replacing them.
Aha!
Hertha decided to solve the mystery of why the lights hissed. And in 1895, she finally had a breakthrough. She realised that the hissing and flickering was caused by oxygen coming into contact with the carbon rods.
Ah.
And unfortunately, the air has a bit of oxygen in it, doesn't it? Because that's what we breathe.
Yeah, the trees produce oxygen. But if they're...
Damn trees ruining our lights.
Hey. But Dad...
Chop the tree down!
No! Don't be a Susie sheep. Oh, and also, if we chop the tree, all the trees in the world down, we die because they produce oxygen that we breathe.
I think more oxygen's produced in the oceans, but okay. She demonstrated that if you replace the oxygen within the lamp with an inert gas...
Inert?
Yeah, one that doesn't react.
So...
You could get a steady arc of electricity, which will provide even more light.
So she made a solitary one.
She made a lamp that didn't have oxygen within it. And then the arc was working much more efficiently.
Okay. I know what solitary means.
On your own?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sitting alone in a corner and not talking to anyone.
That's one thing it can be. Hertha Urton wrote a series of articles for a journal called The Electrician, discussing her findings and establishing what became known as the Urton Equation, as a means of explaining how you could ensure that arc lights would work in future without any hissing or flickering. No, that's stopped now.
Okay.
In 1899, she was the first woman ever to read her own paper before the Institution of Electrical Engineers.
What's an institution?
Like a special club.
A club?
Where all the electrical engineers go to talk about electrical engineering stuff.
Were they mostly men?
Almost all men.
What?
In fact, at this point, all of them were men.
What?
Her paper was called The Hissing of the Electric Arc. Hertha impressed the members so much that she was then elected the first female member. So she was the first member who was a woman.
Oh my God, men are being treated like kings and women are being treated like dirt in history. I hate
history. Hertha's not being treated that way. Just as a side note, the next woman to be admitted to the Institute of Electrical Engineers was Dorothy Smith in 1958. So it took nearly 60 years for them to elect a second woman as part of the Institute.
Yay. Was it her daughter?
No, her daughter became an MP.
What's an MP?
A Member of Parliament. She helped to make the laws. And she was one of the first female MPs. So the innovation went down. And I'm sure Barbara Bodichon, the original Barbara Bodichon, would have been very pleased that her namesake became an MP.
Was...
Considering they were suffragettes.
Was the little girl's mum... Was
She became Phoebe. Known as Barbie.
Was Phoebe...
No, Hertha.
Was her... Hertha. Proud of Barbie.
Oh, yes. Very much so. They had a really good relationship.
They hugged and hugged.
Yes, and she was proud of, you know, Barbie. She was fighting for women to have the vote. Her daughter became an MP. Not just having a vote, but making the laws. It was amazing.
She became a suffragette. Da, da,
da, da. Yes, she does become a suffragette. Yes. Just let me get to that.
Yes!
In 1899, before she became a suffragette, she was also invited to attend the International Congress of Women in London, where she was in charge of the physical science section. In 1902, she published a book called The Electric Arc.
The Electric Arc has stopped hissing in the newspaper.
It summarised all of her findings and indicated that she was ready to move on to another topic of research. She was like, I've done this. Completed it. Solved the problem. I need something else to learn. Why is your hand in the air? You're not at school. Go on.
Okay, it's a force of habit.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there was newspaper and there was a horoscope, which is a
very unscientific, yeah.
And then it said to someone, the lamps will stop hissing. Then the next day they did. It would have been right.
Yeah, but horoscopes are not real. Sorry.
But in my mind they are.
Right. Well, your mind is wrong.
My mind
While on
my
a family
mind.
Holiday at the beach, Hertha became fascinated by the ripples of the sand on the beach and began experiments looking at the impact of waves and air vortices. Initially, this was to try and understand coastal erosion, which is good for environmental work, isn't it? If you understand why the coast is being eroded, you can put in steps to stop that.
I'm going to put in steps to stop that when I'm 16.
She also found time to become a maths teacher again. This time for the daughter of Marie Curie, who definitely is in your book of famous women. She was a female scientist who discovered radium and radiation.
She was the one who created the green light
and
put it by her bed.
And then died of cancer because of the green light, yeah.
Cancer.
Yeah.
I know cancer.
But she looked after Marie Curie's daughter, taught her maths, and Marie Curie became a close friend to Hertha for the rest of her life. So these female scientists together...
But, Dad, why? Yeah. How did the thing create the green light create cancer?
We'll go into it. It's a bit detailed for now.
No, just tell me.
The glow is radiation, and when the body is hit by radiation, it causes our cells to mutate in a way that grows cancers.
Okay.
So you've got to be very careful.
Okay, now I know.
Hmm. I'll show you something about the Radium Girls, the women who made watches. Actually, it takes it back to watches. They had luminous paint, and they kept licking, you know, the tip of the brush and dipping it in the luminous paint that had radiation in it, radium.
No.
It caused some serious issues with the jaws falling off. But we don't need to go into that because it's disgusting.
Please don't. Also, this also forms into books. Mm. If you never accidentally drop a book in the back of a poison and then wash everything but the pages, because then if someone
is this going back to me saying that you could murder someone with a book?
Yes.
Yeah.
Licks and then flips a page.
Not everybody licks and flips though.
I don't.
Mm. Just so that you're not poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. Sadly, in 1908, Hertha's husband William died. Though she was now financially secure because she inherited all of his money, Hertha began to resent that, without her husband to chaperone her, she was less able to access the scientific institutions that she had contributed so much to. So, when the women's suffrage movement moved towards direct action via the suffragettes, and can you remember what direct action was? Smashing windows.
They smashed windows.
Setting fire to things.
Like lampposts.
Post a lot of the time, letters. Planting bombs and blowing things up.
I just have a picture of some whacking the windows with a big stick and then...
Threatening to assassinate people.
Yeah.
Loads of stuff.
Also, I can imagine the clothes purple, green and white.
Yep. When the suffragettes were getting going, Hertha sold her collection of fine fur coats.
No.
To help provide funds, and she was one of the delegates who marched to Westminster on Black Friday. She would also have the Pankhursts and other suffragettes to stay in her home when they were recuperating from periods of imprisonment and hunger strikes.
What does that mean?
Recuperating. Getting better. Because, as you can imagine, spending time in prison where people are trying to force-feed you, it doesn't do well for your body. And when they got released from prison, she'd go, come and stay at my place. I'll look after you. I'll make you nice food. I'll get you back on your feet again.
If anyone was forcing to make me eat poisoned food, I'd just slap it.
It wasn't poisoned food. The women went on hunger strikes, and the government were worried that if they started dying, it would look bad. So they forced tubes down their throats and just poured like a slurry of food into their stomachs.
If that was happening, if someone was trying to feed me using a spoon,
it wasn't a spoon, it was a tube. Well, you didn't get a chance to say no.
It was feeding me down a tube. I just tip my head up and then make it go down their throat.
No, it was horrific. Apparently it was very, very traumatic having yourself being force-fed during this time, but a lot of the suffragettes did it anyway because they wanted to prove a point.
Okay.
And they knew it was going to be horrific and did it anyway.
Yeah.
Hertha continued to produce scientific papers. However, she could never have predicted how important her work on air and water currents would turn out to be. Are you ready to find out the reason that she's famous?
Yeah, I'm really, really, really. Okay, tell me in 3, 2, 1, and now.
Following the development of trench warfare during World War I.
Just get to the famous bit.
I've got to give the context.
Okay.
Following the development of trench warfare during World War I, both sides realised that they needed to come up with an advantage to break the stalemate. Because what had happened was you'd have a line of trenches on one side with the German army in, you'd have a line of trenches on the other side with the British army in, and then nothing would really happen because neither side could break the other. So you just ended up with these long series of trenches that just sort of had the war in a stalemate, and people would just run at each other, and loads of people would die, but nothing would really change.
Oh.
Mm. It was a terrible loss of life.
That's why I never want to become an army soldier.
Good. And basically, both sides were scrabbling around to find some way of getting an advantage so that they could win the war. And in the spring of 1915, the Germans believed that they had the answer. And do you know what the answer was?
A wall!
Poisoned gas.
Bombs!
Poisoned gas.
Bombs!
The answer's poison gas. They had artillery. It's poison gas.
So, like poison farts?
No, like chemicals that would cause you to die. They would burn your throat and your
like
nose
ink.
And make you blind. Chlorine is a one that they used quite a bit.
Okay.
A cloud of noxious gas that would burn your throat, burn your eyes, stop you being able to breathe, cause horrific injuries. This new chemical attack was first used at Ypres and resulted in significant casualties to the British. Hearing about the new threat to British troops, Hertha realised that she could apply her study of rippling water to devise a method of repelling the gas. She constructed a fake battlefield, complete with trenches, in a tank full of sand, and used smoke from paper fires to simulate the gas.
Okay.
So she set up an experiment.
Cool.
After only a few weeks, Hertha had invented a fan device that released a puff of air when hit against a hard surface, thereby forcing back the advancing gas. Within a month of the first gas attack at Ypres, Hertha approached the army with her design and said, "Look, they've got this new weapon. This is what's going to save our troops. You can have it for free.
Mini fans!
You can have this device for free. You can make thousands of them. Give them to all of the troops. It will save lives."
Okay, so this is what I'm picturing. A green...
It's not like a traditional fan.
No, I mean like a mini green handle and then green, a lighter green.
I don't think they were that bothered with the colour palette that they used.
Grey. Grey. Like an army colour.
Camouflage.
Yeah,
you're thinking of camo fans, aren't you?
Yeah, camo fans.
I don't think the
camo fans with two blades.
I don't think we've developed camo uniforms yet.
Camo fans.
But within a month, she had these things designed, ready to go. She went to the British Army and went, "Here you go, use them, please."
Use the camo fans.
Yeah, I don't expect any payment for this. Go for it.
So they made lots of camo fans.
No, the government decided they didn't want it. They said that her design was too simple to be taken seriously.
The camo fan's colour is not simple.
Despite being a well-known inventor and scientist, Hertha was dismissed. She suspected that this was due to her being a woman and a suffragette, but because she knew her device worked, she refused to give up and continued to pester the MOD until they eventually relented and agreed to trial the design.
Yay!
And of course it did work really, really well.
Yeah.
Eventually, more than 100,000 Ayrton flapper fans, as they were known, were used across France and Belgium. They were praised for their use in rolling back large clouds of heavy toxic gases.
And farts.
And they obviously saved thousands of lives.
Yes.
However, the fact that it had taken over a year for them to be implemented left Hertha feeling terrible when she thought about the number of lives that might have been saved if the fans had been adopted straight away. So even though she definitely saved thousands of soldiers' lives, she still felt terrible that it couldn't have been more. Because if she'd have somehow managed to convince them during that first meeting, lots more people wouldn't have suffered in gas attacks. And not just the people who died, the people who ended up blind, the people who ended up with lung conditions, the people who, you know, were irreparably changed. Because she was a really nice person. And she cared.
I'm a soft person.
It's good to be a soft person. It's good to care. As a result, after the war, she continued working on the fan, adapting it for use in factories to protect workers. So in lots of factories, there's a lot of gases and stuff going around. So she was like, "We've proved it can work with gas in the war. So here, have them in your factories. And if any accidents happen, your workers will be able to save themselves."
So this is what I'm
thinking. It's health and safety is what she was thinking of.
So this is what I'm thinking. She's made lots of camo fans strapped around the ceiling, then a big nasty gas cloud coming in, and then it being blown away out the door.
Think of it a bit like the equivalent of a fire extinguisher today. It was a health and safety device for at work was what it developed into.
Okay.
Hertha helped found the International Federation of University Women in 1919 and the National Union of Scientific Workers in 1920. To further help people who had suffered the same things that she had in terms of needing some sisters in arms to support them in their scientific endeavours.
Okay.
She's publishing more scientific papers all through this as well.
So she's an author?
She publishes scientific papers. It's slightly different. It's research papers. So it's still writing and they're still published, but they're not fiction.
Okay.
However, in August 1923...
She died.
Hertha was bitten.
She was bitten?
By an insect.
And what type of insect?
Don't know.
Poisonous?
No. But the bite became infected and led to blood poisoning. And Hertha died of sepsis on August the 26th at the age of 69. Her final scientific paper was presented to the Royal Society posthumously. And her friend Ottilie, remember Ottilie Blind? Or it might be Blind. Ottilie, who had given Hertha her name 4 decades before, created the Hertha Ayrton Research Fellowship at Girton College to support disadvantaged women into university education. It's a fellowship that continues to this day. So if you wanted to go down the science and maths route and you wanted to go to Cambridge, you could apply for the Hertha Ayrton Research Fellowship if you wanted to. Or you could go to Girton College if you wanted to. What do you reckon? You could possibly sleep in the same bed that she had when she was a student. How cool would that be?
Very.
You could borrow Hertha's bed.
But
I'm sure she wouldn't mind. To put it in perspective, darling, today, if she'd lived, she would be 170. I don't think she was ever going to live to be 170, was she? And that is the story of Hertha Ayrton. A life that can be best summed up by her own personal mantra, which she wrote on the cover of each of her notebooks. So she had a little saying that she tried to live her life by, and she made sure that the first thing she wrote on any new notebook was this saying. Do you want to hear her saying?
Yeah.
Prove all things. Hold fast that which is good. So make sure you provide evidence and always do the right thing. Which is a great mantra for a scientist. Yeah?
Plus I prove evidence of things at school that I've seen people do that are naughty.
Yes.
I speak justice.
That's fine.
In school.
You speak justice.
Yes, I speak justice.
In school.
Yes, in school.
To end, we're going to play a new game.
What? Called
How Long Will Evie Sit Around and Listen to Me Reciting the Entirety of Hertha
by
Algernon Charles Swinburne.
No!
I am that which began.
Dad, just stop.
Out of me the years roll. Out of me God and man. I am equal and whole. God changes a man, the form of them bodily, and I am the soul.
Of the human body.
Before ever land was, before ever the sea, or soft hair of the grass, or fair limbs of the tree, or the fresh-coloured fruit of my branches, I was, and thy soul was in me. First life, on many sources, first drifted and swam. Out of me are the forces that save it or damn. Out of me man and woman, and wild beast and bird. Before God was, I am.
Dad.
Beside or above me, naught is there to go. Love or unlove me, or know me or no. I am that which unloves me and loves. I am stricken. And I am the blow. I mark that is missed, and the arrows that miss. I am the mouth that is...
Hi there, it's Emma, Chief Organiser at Consistently Eccentric, here to remind you all that if you like what you hear, you can catch up with all previous episodes and session series by searching for us on Acast, Spotify and iTunes. How fancy. You can also join us on Instagram at Consistently Eccentric Podcast, where we update on the weekly episode and post all of our bonus content for you lucky lot. See you next week.
Canst thou say in thine heart thou hast seen with thine eyes? With what cunning of art?
Dad.
Thou was wrought in what wise, by what force of what stuff thou was shapen and shown on my breast to the skies.
Goodbye, guys.
Who hath given, who hath sold it thee, knowledge of me? Hast thou wilderness told it thee? Hast thou learnt of the sea? Hast thou continued with the spirit in the night? Has the winds taken counsel with thee? Have I set such a star to show light on thy brow? That thou soarest from afar.
Please stop.
Oh, there's the last line. Man equal and one with me, man that is made of me, man that is I.
Goodbye.